Yeah, work on. Okay, we're just going to do a quick Q&A. I guess we don't have to set up a table. We have speakers in the audience that can receive the microphone.
Sure.
After, okay, we ask questions. I'm just going to read a few questions that we got this evening, and then I want to open it up to the audience for anybody else that may have questions. So these questions will be directed to the speakers, and whichever speaker is comfortable with answering that, just raise your hand. Damon will bring the microphone over. Okay. Here's a question. Is Richard still here? Okay. Has any of your international talks led to investigations by non-U.S. governments?
Once again.
Has any of your international talks led to investigations by non-U.S. governments?
Unfortunately not. In fact, Japan was our biggest hope, and Senator Fujita basically put the ball back in our court. He said, we'll support you, but you got to do the investigation. He just didn't feel comfortable, and of course, he's feeling a whole lot more less comfortable now. Japan is in deep doo-doo, economically, politically. It's a disaster. So, socially, there are international bodies that are fully capable of investigating 9/11. What does their degree of corruption versus the degree of corruption in our Congress, given that they basically endorsed the 9/11 Commission report, we can't conclude too well otherwise. This is something that we're very humbled by. The question is of how do we get a real investigation? What we do know is we have some pretty important requirements about that investigation in order to endorse it, that it uses the scientific method, that it accounts for all the evidence that NIST has swept under the rug, that it takes testimony under oath, that they offered immunity in order to bring witnesses forward free from prosecution, those kinds of things. So let's have the criteria there and be open to where the investigation might come from. Could come from Canada, who has some important projects. What is the name of that project in Canada? There's the Toronto hearings, which Graham and Kevin will be sharing with you right now, as a matter of fact. And there's a project by Daniel LeBlanc. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Thank you, Richard. We are going to have some 4 days of public hearings in Toronto to mark the 10th anniversary of 9/11, 8th, 9th, 10th, and 11th of September. Kevin and I are both on the steering committee of that. It will not be an academic conference. It's an attempt to systematically present the best evidence that we have come up with over the last 10 years. And we've already been inviting various speakers, including, of course, Richard and Niels Harrit, Steve Jones, Jonathan Cole, David Chandler, so on and so forth, have already agreed to come. But we're still inviting speakers, and the idea is to have a distinguished panel who will listen to the 4 days of presentations, which will be grouped according to theme, and will then write a report. And that report, each of the expert speakers, by the way, will have to make a legally binding, I always forget what it's called, but it's a declaration. It's like an affidavit. So they could actually be taken to court for perjury if they make a false statement. That means that there's a quasi-legality built into this. The report that's produced will be edited by James Gourley of the International Center for 9/11 Studies, which is also the main sponsor for this event. Now, that's not the same as having a government, of course, sponsor this, and it's not the same as having hearings in a court. But I think this project we're involved with, all of us, is made up of incremental stages. And what we're trying to do is give a little bit more power, a little bit more dignity to this thing, And that's hopefully what our hearings are going to do. If this report by prestigious people is written well and distributed to all the scientific bodies, royal societies, governmental committees, the United Nations, and so on, along with a video record of the conference, it's possible that it will shake loose something that might lead to a more formal government-sponsored, international government-sponsored set of hearings. The only other thing I'll say is that Richard mentioned there's more than one initiative that people are thinking of, and various people are discussing the possibility of very ambitious tribunals as well. But in the meantime, we wanted to make sure we got something that was actually going to happen, that we can fundraise for, we can put it on, and it's pretty well, it should be publicly announced to you together with the website and the donation button within about 2 weeks, I would say. So that's where we are.
Excellent. Okay, next. Wonderful. Next question real quick. Who had the most, and this is a question now that we've obviously confirmed where the evidence stands. Who had the most to gain from WTC7 coming down? For any speaker. Well,
I'll give it a shot because I think, believe it or not, I'm the youngest of the speakers left tonight, and I may be staying awake a little bit longer. I don't know. Building 7 had. I think it's really a mystery to some extent as to why Building 7 was brought down. People have speculated that Building 7 included some sort of facility like the OEM, perhaps, for conducting a wider set of operations on 9/11. So they may have wanted to destroy that. The SEC documents people have mentioned, Richard mentioned specifically the Enron WorldCom documents. That's a potential motive to destroy all those documents. And so it's not a clear answer. I'm not really ready to speculate on that specific question.
I'm going to go a little bit further than speculation.
Okay.
I'm going to say that the owner of the lease, the leaseholder, had a tremendous amount to gain. And that understanding that Building 7 was part of the complete WTC complex that the lease was taken out on only 6 weeks before 9/11, it makes perfect sense that the owner would want all those buildings down so he can collect all the insurance money. Over $800 million were collected from WTC7 coming down alone. And this is on top of the billions and billions of dollars that were collected that Larry Silverstein won in court by arguing that it was two separate terrorist attacks, so he actually doubled the insurance money. Yes, sir. Is that, you have a question?
Clarification of the question?
Yes.
I thought I heard that there were some structural problems with the building, foundation problems that were of some concern. Has anyone heard anything about that, that issue?
Yeah, I'm on. There were all kinds of stories going on. You heard that they were waiting for Building 7 to come down. One of the reasons they were waiting is because some engineer that you heard about this morning also said there was some bulging and some. That wasn't in the foundation. Had you heard that at all, Kevin? I've heard this rumor, but it's not a part of the official story or what the debunkers, so-called debunkers, like to use. That the collapse of the towers somehow weakened the foundation of Building 7. They don't even go there, so why should we, the official story spokespeople? It's all speculation on their part. And, you know, you if there's no support in the official story, then you don't have to argue against it. Is that helpful?
That's good. We have a question in the back. Yes, sir?
Just a comment. It was reported in the media that They rebuilt. They actually took out a floor for one of the banks, and they actually removed a floor and then reinforced it with a lot of steel. And have you looked at things that have a comment on that? I mean, I have the articles.
Yeah, there was. As I think it was Kevin or Tony mentioned today, this is an incredible structure. Building 7 was built so that you could take up to two floors, I think three stories high, open space inside of a high rise. I mean, that's pretty unusual. So it's extremely strong, designed for such eventualities. Well, if it's designed to be unbraced for three stories, some of those columns, then it would be much stronger than it needed to be if that, in fact, did not happen and that those floors were there anyway. And I think in the case of the Solomon Brothers building, they did use a three-story atrium, but it was designed for that. So it's an irrelevant concern given that. Structural engineers always are notorious for over-designing things, at least five times stronger than they need to be.
The article says that it was reinforced with a very substantial amount of steel. I've heard the other side argue that that made it weaker. I don't know why.
Oh, no, more steel couldn't possibly make it weaker. Yeah, it would only make it stronger. Tony.
There was a solid bottom set of chains.
Well, let's get this on the microphone, because I can't even hear you.
There was additional steel added. There was some kind of renovation of the building in the upper floors that Solomon Brothers had done. That's all I know. But that would not make it weaker. So what Richard's saying is... Right.
Okay. Go ahead, Valerie.
There was one slide, and if I'm not mistaken, the slide said that all except 236 pieces of steel were taken off the site and recycled. What happened to the 236 pieces?
Actually, they're around. We have a lot of that steel is in a hangar at JFK Airport, and some of it's in sculptures around. Much of it has been and is being given away. Does that help? Well, some of it has. You saw some photographs of some sculptures that have been tested. All of it needs to be tested. We don't have access to most of it. I know that Dr. Jones has asked NIST to test that steel and to ask if we could systematically test it. Would it show? It very well might. It certainly showed something on the slag at the ends of the beams used in the sculpture in Clarkston Memorial, Clarkston College. Clarkston University.
Why hasn't it been tested?
It was tested. Dr. Jones tested it, and he found the elements of thermite in it.
Go ahead, Robert.
Okay, yeah, I have a question. The Building 7 is supposedly brought down by fires. So, but if I understand it correctly, the NIST report did not say how the fires got started that they knew for sure. Just that it may have gotten started a couple different ways, but it's kind of interesting if they don't know how the fires got started, and they're not able to say why the building was on fire, and yet it fell down because of fire.
Well, they suggest that the fires were started because of these beams that were blown 350 feet over the top of Building 7 and into Building 7. That's a whole other question in and of itself. But why the ends of these beams are dripping with molten metal that would start these fires in Building 7 is another question. But even more curious than that is why we have the hottest fires, the biggest fires, on the backside of World Trade Center 7, on the floor occupied by the Securities and Exchange Commission, where they say then the initiation of collapse happened. As Kevin suggested, these are really quite suspicious fires.
Okay, Eric, go ahead.
I have a question for Kevin Ryan. Do you consider the NIST report on Building 7 to be scientific fraud, and why?
I tried to make that point, that I believe that NIST has committed scientific fraud with the Building 7 report. They've also, although that's not part of this presentation, done so with the report on the towers for different reasons. But so if I can remember the reasons, NIST's model did not use the fire photo, the photos and videos as input. They used arbitrary inputs otherwise, in terms of the migration of the fire, the fuel load on the floors, and all that sort of thing. They didn't do any physical testing, which they easily could have done. They easily could have put together an assembly like they did for the towers with the floor models. They built floor models and they tested them in furnaces to see what would happen with fire. And so they could have done the exact same thing easily. They could have done the test that the Cardington people did, except specifically with the components used in Building 7. They didn't do that. Instead, they spent their $20 million on these very non-explanatory computer models that were built on either no evidence or incorrect evidence, false evidence.
Thank you. One of the things that I have read about this Building 7 was that the Con Edison had a substation in that building, and that in order to put this big complex of substation in the building, it had to do a lot of reinforcement. It was in the lower part of the building. I'm not an expert on where it was located. But in addition to that was the Office of Energy Management for the City of New York. I'm just wondering if anybody has any inkling as to why the City of New York is just not interested in knowing more about the building that they were supposed to be in to handle an emergency, why it collapsed without really anything other than a fire. It's just very perplexing to me, and wanted to know if anybody had anything to say on that one.
I'll make a quick attempt to answer that. I do feel that the City of New York and the legislature, which NYC Can has been working with, as I mentioned before, we met with over a quarter of the council, falls in lockstep with the rest of the legislatures of the state, as well as the federal government, in the sense that they don't want to touch it for whatever reason. And there's many reasons why we know our legislatures and our Congress do not want to touch certain issues. I do feel that this is an issue that, and I mentioned before, the council members do want to see a more of a group, really a majority of council members, so they could work together to do this. Unfortunately, legislatures are just like the rest of the U.S. We don't have the information, and American people really don't understand the information. Legislatures are in the same sense, they have a hard time grasping the information, and then once they understand the social, implications, the retribution that they may get, who knows? I mean, look what happened to Cynthia McKinney when she challenged Donald Rumsfeld. It's already been proven that, you step out of line, something may happen. Power comes in numbers. So until we get enough legislative people in New York City or anywhere, really, and anywhere in the U.S., the majority of them, to say, hey, we're going to do this, you know, that's maybe when we could start breaking out and really getting some proper investigations. The gentleman behind him?
Actually, Manny, we're going to have to end it because...
All right. So...
We only rented this to 10 o'clock, and they have to clean this whole place in about 10 minutes.
We got 10 minutes to clean. So then we will end it. I encourage anyone that has any further questions to ask specifically any speakers. I want to thank everybody for coming to this event. This has been absolutely incredible, historical. Please donate to buildingwatt.org. Investigate building7.org. Remember building7.org. Please support what we're doing. And I'm very appreciative and humbled by everyone that came tonight to support us. Thank you so much.
And a particular thanks to the university and all of the AV crew that has been with us for the 12 hours nonstop. Give them a big round of applause. And we have a blue glove.